I'm Grant.
And this is
Sex Archie, a dalliance in Riverdale.
Oh, we're fancy.
That's right. We're a Riverdale recap podcast here to talk about, well, the end of our show.
It's the end.
It is the end. We've got a full agenda for today.
We do. A little bit of a memory lane.
Yeah, but our own memories
but
this
time. But our own memories.
Yeah, so I'd like to set the stage. I'd like us all to cast your minds back to January and February of 2017. The National Women's March has just become the largest single-day protest in American history.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary actors John Hurt and Mary Tyler Moore both pass away on the same day.
Oh,
the Patriots of New England come from 25 points behind in the final quarter to win the Super Bowl. If any Atlanta Falcon fans are listening, I apologize. I just had to say it. It's sequel time in Hollywood. John Wick 2, the Lego Batman movie, 50 Shades Darker, and most of all, Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage are lighting up the silver screen. Speaking of films, everyone's abuzz with Warren Beatty accidentally naming La La Land instead of the actual Best Picture, Moonlight.
Yeah, that was insane.
This is when we all got our first look at the Nintendo Switch and our first chance to play Resident Evil 7. And meanwhile, in all of this, a married couple in Chicago, Illinois thinks this show looks like it could be something worth talking about.
Yes. Yes. We made it to episode 3 and we're like, yeah, we got to talk about this to someone. My God.
So yeah, a lot has changed in our personal lives. We had a different address. Mm-hmm. You had a different job. Mm-hmm. We had no Moki.
We had no Moki.
No goddaughter.
No.
Their Gextra Life 1 had not occurred.
What? Wait, really?
Really? Oh, Gextra Life 1 was that fall.
Oh.
Yes.
Fuck, I didn't even realize that.
If anybody wants to measure time by some of my other projects, Let's Play Mouse Guard was in pre-production. We hadn't even recorded our character creation episode. The Uncharted 4 Let's Play was partway through.
Dang.
Yes.
That's crazy. We didn't have a car.
We didn't have a car.
We didn't have a car. Dang. Life with no Moki is sad. I don't like that.
No one had a Moki. She wasn't born yet.
But I don't like the idea of no Moki.
Yeah.
I love the baby. Hi, baby. But she looks cute. She's cute.
What we're going to do today is say goodbye to Riverdale and Sex Archie every way we could have thought of doing.
Yeah.
And let's start by talking about Chapter 1, The River's Edge, written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa and directed by Lee Toland Krieger.
So we did a little rewatch.
We just rewatched the first episode of Riverdale, and boy, does it feel different.
I definitely have not seen this in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Everything feels different. It's so much more expensive, really.
Oh,
is what it comes down to.
So much more expensive.
Because they're filming everything in real locations.
They actually shot in locations. You actually see, like, not just zoomed in on whatever the set is, but there's, like, shit behind where they're filming.
You can see the Dairy Queen that's next door to Pops, just down the corner. And the train going by the window of Pops.
Uh-huh. Like, so many establishing shots that we have not seen in forever. I kind of forgot that's what Riverdale looked like. I would like to point out that the pilot does show us that there are other businesses in Riverdale.
Yeah, a fucking Dairy Queen.
There's a comic book store. Uh-huh. It's a lot of shit.
MLJ Comics, of course.
Also, it is tinted like Twilight.
These scenes are slathered in extras. There's people all
over
the place.
There are so many. They're like, when they're walking through the high school, it is just a bajillion people.
And there's what, like 10 licensed songs? Like 10 actual pop songs?
Yes! The music is so good.
Plus the live performance of Cyndi Lauper's All Through the Night by Josie and the Pussycats.
But the music and the feel of it is just so, like, dreamy.
Or about 40 seconds of it. I could have used more All Through the Night by Cyndi Lauper as performed by Josie and the Pussycats. But yeah, I mean, if we did a further rewatch, if we watched like the first three, I would be curious to see how much of that is pilot stuff and how much is season one in general stuff.
Yeah. Though I do think about just how much, thinking through like the first few seasons, there's a lot more stuff that happens outside.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot more nature walks in the first season or two.
And I think to like the final episode where they're like in front of the movie theater on the sidewalk and how like, my God, that looks like that would be in Hollywood Studios.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very clearly a filmed backlot.
Yes.
The one block that we see through season 7 and 6.
And it's just... like, it feels so different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very bizarre.
When Pops teleports into the woods, I really think Pops' location is a pilot thing.
Yes, yeah. It is. Because later it becomes like it's on kind of the outskirts of town a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, like, you're getting the traffic coming in from the lonely highway.
Right.
And there's nothing else, like, right around it. Not the case. Not the fucking case.
Speaking of locations, one of the first ones you recognize, I really appreciated. So, in our previous episode about the finale, there is the scene where our core four are joyriding down a bridge over the river. And I recall saying in the episode, that was some cool aerial photography. I like that bridge.
Yes.
That bridge is one of the first things you see in the first episode. Yeah. I had forgotten. That's amazing.
Oh, I didn't forget that. I remember
Except in chapter one, it is the Blossom Twins driving to the viewer's right.
Yeah. And that's why it's...
to disaster. And in the finale, it is our main characters driving to the left.
Yeah.
Away from disaster, I guess.
And like the only other time we get that is when they're in the jalopy around graduation and they're driving away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's another fact in this episode that I think, if we had realized, would have derailed years of our own program.
Oh.
Josie McCoy mentions winning the Rockland County Battle of the Bands.
Oh.
Which means Riverdale has always been in commuting distance of New York City. Riverdale never moved. They were just always talking about Canada when it's 100 miles away.
Okay, but... later in another part of the episode, when Veronica's, like, introducing herself to, like, Archie and Betty, they're like, oh, where'd you move from? She's like, New York. Not the city. She doesn't specify. They could be like, oh, yeah, we're from this state, too.
She doesn't have to specify because they're in New York State. So clearly, she must mean New York City.
Do people say that, though? If you're in New York... and you're from New York City and you're telling other New Yorkers that you're from New York City, do you just say New York? Or do you say New York City?
You know what else you might say? Justin Ginger Lake.
Yeah, oh my God, they got so many lines in this show. Like, they don't write it like they used to. We had so much material to pull titles from back then.
Yes.
That, like, they don't give us
now. Yes.
In the later seasons.
Like, take that ginger bull by the horns tonight.
Yeah.
That's 2 seconds after Archie got hot.
Yep. Yep.
In fact, like, they talk about Archie's hair so much, it sounds like a radio drama. It sounds like they're reminding you of something you cannot see plain as day with your eyeballs.
Yeah. Well, they were unsure if, like, the Twilight filter was going to make it come across as red, so they wanted to make sure we knew.
I'm just going through some very sparse notes I took through it. So, another budget thing. The music room is, one, huge, two, full of instruments.
So many instruments!
There's a timpani set. There's, like, a cello just, like, leaning against the wall with the other cellos.
There's a whole wall of instruments. Whole wall. It looks like Carter's set up for a concert from Carbon Leaf. That dude has like 50 instruments on stage.
Also, something that the final season obviously isn't, but I feel like the last few seasons haven't been, this premiere is so internet forward.
Mm.
Cheryl introduces herself with her Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Veronica's experience of the downfall of her family is told through the tale of online trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Jughead's closing narration is that after they find Jason's dead body with the gunshot wound, quote, everyone would be talking, texting, and posting about it.
Yeah. Well, is that like really a reflection of, 2017,
mm-hmm,
I feel like, because, but like, that's like social media prime time.
Yeah.
When like all the platforms were going, right?
Right, right.
It's not like when we were, 2010, when we were in college, it was just like Facebook, because MySpace was now obsolete. Like 2017 is like, you had everything,
mm-hmm,
and everyone was on everything.
And
smartphones were really becoming, I think, super common for everyone to have within the past few years before this.
Yeah, I think we had gotten past the point where everyone had them, and now we were living in the world transformed by everyone having them.
Yes, that. You know? Yeah, because
when you're
like,
just past the wave, that's when TV, I guess, really catches up. Yeah.
Yeah, because like 2012, 2013, like I didn't get, I think it was like 2011. 12 when I got a smartphone,
mm-hmm,
but it was still pretty crappy. So like that was still a time when either you had it or you didn't have it. And now we're in the peak of everyone living in there. And someone's going to totally be like, no, you're wrong. But like, this is how I remember it.
Another thing we've talked about a lot that changed with the show. I miss the sex in Sex Archie.
Right.
Like, this episode is not terribly explicit. There is some casual nudity. We first meet Betty just in her bra getting ready.
But there's a lot of, like...
But the 7 minutes in heaven scene?
7 minutes in heaven.
Like, there is nothing hotter you can say before making out than, quote, we definitely shouldn't do this, and then they do it anyway.
Yeah.
That's the heat. That's the juice.
Yeah.
They stopped bringing it. Yeah. They just stopped.
And it's also shit like, hey, we're going to go fuck in the woods. Oh, wait, never mind. There's a dead body. We don't get that anymore.
Like, the last time there was, like, hot sex in Riverdale was season 5? It was season 5. When they're all reconnecting as adults.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Archie and Betty had some hot shit going on in season 5.
But, like, none of it was as... like explicit as it had been.
No one was
getting thrown up on like a counter.
Mm-hmm.
We really went a different way.
Speaking of things that changed in time, when we first watched this 7 years ago, the scene where Jughead and Archie talk and he's like, you should go talk to Betty. It would have gone a long way with me. And you realize that they used to be best friends and they're not anymore.
Yeah.
That was devastating.
Yes.
I don't care now. Now that I've watched a show for 7 years where they go months worth of episodes at a time without talking, I don't care.
Okay, I care in the sense of, like, I want them to be friends, but also, like,
sometimes
wow,
they are.
We should remember this in the future when we don't talk. Like, Archie and Jughead didn't even have, like, a final scene together at the end of the show. It was Jughead and Betty.
Yes. Which is a great realization of what Riverdale became in its own right.
Yes.
As apart from the source material.
But, like, what?
they had their good times. They rode the rails to run out of town away from Hiram.
They were basically being brothers, was Jughead slept on his floor.
Yeah, yeah. And then those times ended.
Yes.
The show does a lot about Jughead and Betty just like drifting apart and never really finding it again after graduation, right? That's like part of the big tragedy of season 5.
Yeah.
But it doesn't talk about him and Archie doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, season one Reggie.
Season one Reggie is so fun.
So much. So much.
He is...
He also looks like a 40-year-old man compared to the rest of them.
But he is perfect in this episode. Yes. I don't remember loving him as much with season one as a whole.
Yeah.
But he's just absolutely perfect in this first episode.
Well, I think it's because in the first episode, he's like a bro.
Yes.
And he's so bro heavy, but he's not like being a complete fucking asshole to everyone.
Right, right. He's not calling people names.
Yeah.
I described him before as like a guy who's an asshole but doesn't know he is. He thinks he's everybody's best friend.
Yes. Yes.
And that is absolutely true. I stand by it, and it's great. But some stuff that stays true forever, Archie's self-punishment starts at the end of this episode.
Yes.
That scene where he turns down Betty's confession of love because I'll never be good enough for you.
Yep. Always.
That runs through the first five seasons.
I would also like to point out that Archie's ability to, you know, stick to anything and make any decisions for himself also starts in this episode.
Yeah.
Because he's all like, oh, Dad, I want to, like, play music. And Fred's like, well, where'd this come from? Like, it was football and construction. Well, summer changed me a lot. Because Mrs. Grundy fucking said shit about music to him. So now he's all on music.
He tells his dad that I don't want to run the company anymore. I'm like, bro, I can give you day and date when you will want to run the company. When that will be a big, important thing to you.
Also, when football, you'll be like, man, you've never experienced the highs and lows of high school football.
Excuse me, the epic highs and lows.
Never mind about you having to, like, sell drugs to, like, feed your family. Football!
Football! But this episode also ends on Kevin's first tragedy.
Yes.
Little did we know that this would be what defines Kevin Keller's character going forward.
Yeah.
Trying to have sex, failing, and getting caught up in something disastrous.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, just being the catty, very stereotypical gay best friend.
Yeah.
To the point that Veronica basically writes it on a name tag and slaps it on him after seeing him for 5 seconds.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you. That is you forever. But no. Tragedy!
So what did you think about rewatching Chapter 1?
I want to go watch all of Season 1 now.
Yeah. Season 1 is special. Season 1 is really special.
I really want to watch all of Season 1. It's just such a different feel.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, it is beautifully shot.
Yeah.
The pilot is... And again, like, it'd be interesting to see how much of that goes away in the future episodes. But the pilot is, like, so freaking beautiful.
The director did the first 3 episodes in the season 1 finale.
Okay.
And never came back.
Well, I bet those are all really fucking pretty.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it's great because, like, when you think of, like, the it really fits the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The murder mystery.
Yes, yes.
They really play into, like, the fog.
The dreaminess. The dreariness. Woods. Yes.
In addition to, like, the twilight coloring. But it has, like, this haze, this mm-hmm. glow.
The lingering snippets of fragments of people's ideas and perspectives and relationships that I think really fed the early Twin Peaks comparisons that the show didn't really live up to and didn't seem interested in being.
Yeah.
But if you just watch this one in isolation, you can clearly see where that came in the conversation.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the shots to show various things and like the... You know, stuff with, like, Betty's hands and the nails and,
mm-hmm.
Like, the time it takes to show certain things
mm-hmm.
that I'm just like, yeah, they didn't spend time on anything in the end. And then if going from that to that, it makes the last season seem cheap.
This is a thing that is literally true.
It happens with pilots, too.
Yeah, pilots get a big investment uh-huh. to sell the show to the network and the audience.
Yeah,
but also, once a show is picked up, its budget is continually cut
Yeah.
Because by a certain point, they're not expecting new viewers anymore.
Yeah.
So they have to make up that money in lower costs.
Yeah. And you can feel it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Feel it through it. Everyone else is so young.
Yes.
They're all such babies.
They're little babos.
Yeah. What kills me, though, is, like, I think Cole Sprouse looks younger than KJ Apa, and KJ Apa was, like, 18. I was like, wait, what?
Watching this and watching them all grow as performers over the last 7 years, like, in this first episode, Lili Reinhart is just far and away by miles the best actor in this. Camila Mendez is giving a perfectly decent performance, but she will do the exact same things and be so much more fun to watch, so much more compelling.
Yeah.
Like, this first episode, Veronica, is some of my favorite. It is in line with the good Veronica that I go crazy for as the show goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But she brings it so much better in those later seasons. She really grows into the role and takes command of it.
Well, and I feel that too with Cheryl grows into, like, Madeline Petsch grows into her character so much well compared to, like, she just doesn't seem like Cheryl yet.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And
she hasn't been practicing for half a decade.
Yeah. But there's like an intensity isn't there yet. It doesn't take that long actually to get there from what I remember.
Right.
But it is interesting to see, like, oh, this is so
by the end of the season. Damn, she got it.
You know? It's as soon as they start having her wear red lipstick.
I
feel like
her lip liner was out of control.
It was nuts.
Wow. Wow.
It is also, like, interesting how much they used the theme song throughout it.
No, wait, I went into Bella's Lullaby. Not that one. The other one.
Not the other one. No, it really sounds like that at some point.
Yeah, it does.
But they used it so much.
Especially the like, slow, plaintive version after Archie has an almost argument with his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and I both had a moment of awe when Fred came on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was like, Vegas! Buddy!
Buddy!
It's been so long!
It's been so long. Not every season, but most seasons, they start with like, hey, the dog's back. The dog's going to be in this year. And then the dog fades away. One dog or another.
I got so excited in this last season because there was Hot Dog again.
For like 3 out of the first 4 episodes, at least, right?
And then we like stopped and going back to Jughead's home.
Hot Dog disappears. But to prepare for this episode, we didn't just watch the first episode of Riverdale. I listened to the first episode of Sex Archie.
Oh my God.
Would you like to know some things that I noted about that?
Sure.
Within the first 5 minutes.
How much do I swear?
Of the first episode of Sex Archie, you say that you hope Hiram Lodge is a drug lord running a cartel. However, not every prediction is golden. You also talk glowingly about Ezra Miller.
At that time, he was fine.
7 years is a long time.
Okay, 7 years ago, he was fine.
A lot of things can change.
It's not my fault.
In our first episode, we did, of course, a panel screen segment on Archie Andrews himself, and you describe him as, quote, like Charlie Brown but not depressed. I like that line a lot.
It's true. It works.
In that first episode's predictions segment, you say that Veronica and Betty are gonna hook up.
I'm sorry.
They didn't just hook up, they were quite literally endgame.
I feel like I want to, like, now listen just to all the predictions to, like, how many points did I get in 7 years?
Also, in this very first episode, I am already complaining about year math of what these kids, like, frame of reference should be for when they were born. And this is before they put in things like FP's 50th birthday.
Yeah. Well,
which is when the math really gets fucked up.
I was already...
Or the Midnight Club episode where it gets fucked up in a different way. But if you do a double bluff, it kind of fixes FP's 50th birthday.
Well, during this episode, the rewatch, I did have a moment when Kevin referred to Archie. It was like when he got hot, but it was something about like his millennial self or something. And I was like, that appropriate with the timeline? You guys millennials?
No, I think you have to be alive during the turn of the millennium to be a millennial.
Right? Yeah. Right? Like, I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think you being a sophomore in 2017 has you as a millennial.
With the numbers given in this episode, it is reasonable to believe one of these children was conceived on 9/11.
They had to have been born by 1995.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. They're not.
Yeah. Fucking bullshit.
Archie is an Elder Z, and then he does time travel and becomes something else.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
But as we even alluded to in this episode, real heads know the deep lore of Sex Archie. Sex Archie episode 1 is not the first Sex Archie we recorded.
No.
Sex Archie episode 3 is.
Yes.
So I had to listen to that too while I was making dinner.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to guess your first ever prediction in a recorded prediction segment?
Colton Woods.
Yes! The first prediction segment ever.
Fuck yes!
There's a cult in the woods.
And I was so fucking right!
In that segment, I talk about how there's absolutely no basis for this. There's no evidence for it at that point in the program.
And guess what? You're wrong! I was so right!
Do you want to know my first ever prediction immediately before?
Yes.
It was the character of Polly Cooper is not real and is just a second subsumed personality within the mind of Betty Cooper.
Oh, you were wrong. Sorry.
However, the reflection and projection in the Rose's Turn number late this past season does allude to such a thing.
Yeah.
And we know the writer's room is such big fans of Sex Archie.
I feel like you're going for a big stretch here.
Oh, yeah. Well, Moki taught me well.
Yeah, You, I'm sorry you can't have the triumph and the epic high of getting a prediction right in the first time.
I can feel the epic lows, though. You are jumping in your chair. You're rocking around.
I have never been so proud of anything in my life.
You look like you just won the lottery. You're acting like Ed McMahon rang the doorbell and has the publisher's clearinghouse check, which is a reference that the characters of Riverdale should not understand.
I feel like I have won the, like, highest honor of my life. Like, you do not understand how much I was wishing for a cult in the woods. And how then it happened.
Yeah.
And, like, anytime I would get a prediction right, absolutely. But the fact that was my first one. Mm-hmm. This is when people are like, what's your proudest moment in life? Cult in the fucking woods.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I'm so happy. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. The, like, pride I feel in this moment.
You'll find a way, I'm sure.
Lots of melatonin. Our poor neighbors are probably concerned.
I prepared another bit of homework, though. I wasn't done.
Oh, okay. What'd you do?
We've been following this large, large cast for a long, long time, so I was struck with the natural question, of course. Where are they now?
Do-do-do!
I spent days on IMDb and Wikipedia and some of these people's personal websites.
Yeah.
And here are some of the more interesting stories that I found. These are in order of, in most cases,
how they appeared on IMDb?
Yes, which is to say most episodes to least episodes. So we're going to start with our main characters.
Okay.
Lily Reinhart has founded her own production company, Small Victory Productions. She has published a book of poetry. She has produced and starred in Look Both Ways for Netflix and is producing the upcoming Razzlecan movie. If you recognize that name, it's related to the $3 billion crypto scam that, that came out about a year or two ago. Meanwhile, her counterpart, Camila Mendez, is also producing her next upcoming film. It's titled Upgraded. It is a mistaken identity rom-com being made for Amazon Studios. Cole Sprouse is in theaters now as the creature in Lisa Frankenstein, the feature directorial debut of director Zelda Williams. He has produced Braska, a two-season horror podcast based on a post from r/nosleep that he also stars in. KJ Apa, meanwhile, has never been in a good movie in his life and has no announced projects that look like they will be any better. However, he has been granted a chiefly title and joined the council of his home village in Samoa. So that's pretty cool for him.
I did see on his Instagram a while ago that his child locked themselves in a U-Haul and he had to call the cops.
So that's what he's up to these days.
Trying to wrangle small child.
Madeline Petch is set to star in a trilogy of horror films releasing this year from the director of both Deep Blue Sea and Nightmare on Elm Street 4, among others. Casey Cott.
He has been busy.
Casey Cott filmed a movie called Black Spartans. This movie is allegedly based on the true story of the integration of the Michigan State University football team, which has been rejected by every player on the actual historical team due to the complete fabrications and racial stereotypes that comprise the script.
Oh my God, I have not heard a single thing about this.
One of the stories that is absolutely entirely 100% made up is they invented a white player on the team who committed a vicious racially motivated assault, but was insulated from all consequences because his father was a major donor to the school. Again, this did not happen in history. This is made up for the movie. And my fear is that who Casey Cott was playing?
Fuck.
The film crew for Black Spartans also alleges working 90-hour weeks without overtime pay and that no paychecks ever arrived for the final month of work.
Holy fuck.
The producer could not be reached for comment in the articles I read due to his incarceration for financial crimes related to different movies.
Oh my God.
So that's why you haven't heard of Black Spartans. It is never, ever coming out.
I really hope it's not.
No distributor will touch this awful movie.
And this is why when you're doing a movie on a historical thing, you Google it. Google the history first.
Now, we noted before that, of course, he had a stint as Christian, the star of Moulin Rouge on Broadway. That run ended recently on February 6th.
Yes.
Vanessa Morgan is still on the CW, starring currently in the new series Wild Cards. She plays Max Mitchell, a con woman who solves crimes in order to stay out of jail.
Okay.
Baby Dale from that flash midward scene in the finale was played by her actual son that she carried during the filming of season 5, as you'll recall.
Yeah.
Charles Melton went out and made me a liar by not being nominated for an Oscar.
Well, he didn't make you a liar. He was robbed.
In my defense, I was assuming Ryan Gosling would be a contender in the lead actor category.
Yeah.
He is already cast against Elizabeth Olsen in Todd Solondz's next film and attached to an untitled upcoming Alex Garland project.
Ooh.
So let's hope Civil War goes well for him. He is rumored to be in the rumored next season of Beef as well.
Oh.
Mark Consuelos has lately been the new host of Live. You know, the morning show that his wife runs.
Oh.
I wonder how he got that job.
Yeah, I wonder. That's a good question. It's not like he knew anyone or anything.
He also has a recurring role on the upcoming series The Girls on the Bus, based on the lives of young journalists covering the presidential campaign trail.
Oh.
I imagine he's going to be some sort of major staffer or someone, or perhaps a presidential candidate. I don't know. Alvin Sanders, who played Pop Tate, of course, has also been in Wild Cards because he's been in one episode of everything to ever film in Vancouver, including during the run of Riverdale.
That's what happens in Canada.
For this amazing dedication to the art of the Pacific Northwest film industry, he spent 18 years on the board of the Union of British Columbia Performers.
Oh, wow.
The specific Vancouver arm of ACTRA, the Canadian Actors Union.
ACTRA.
Lachlan Monroe, Hal Cooper, the Black Hood himself, has been in 13 shows and films last year, according to IMDb, with 7 upcoming projects. The only one I've heard of is an episode of Reacher.
He busy.
He's the hardest working man in Canada.
Yeah.
One of those many, many things is an adaptation of the Tiger Mom book, which also features Nathalie Bolt.
Oh.
After Katie Keene was canceled, finishing its first season, Ashley Murray starred in Tom Swift, a Nancy Drew spinoff for the CW. That ran for a single 10-episode season before it was canceled. But then, she starred in a Hulu show, a mystery program, The Other Black Girl, which people actually really like for once.
Good luck. I hope this is the one.
It has not yet been renewed for a second season, but I'm pulling for you, Ashley. If anyone deserves it, she's so fantastically talented.
Your list goes on forever. You seriously looked up everyone.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Cody Kearsley may have been too busy to bring Moose back to the 50s because of his commitments to the Detective Knight series, among Bruce Willis's last films in his elder abuse era. By the way, Lachlan Monroe was in those too. He made it work. What's your excuse, Cody?
Mm-mm-mm.
Tierra Scoveby, Polly Cooper, starred in the 2023 Hallmark Channel series Ride as a former rodeo queen. It was also canceled after its inaugural season.
Aww.
Robin Givens joined the main cast of Batwoman in its third season as the second Batwoman CEO mother. They love to make her the mother of a powerful woman.
Robin.
She was Mayor McCoy. Attorney McCoy.
Thank you. Okay. Yes. Okay, I didn't recognize the name.
I have nothing in particular to report about the career of Nikolai Witchell, but I think he should be in a movie with David Dasmalchian. I think I would like that a great deal.
Okay, who is that to?
He was Peter DeVries in Dune Part 1. He was Polka Dot Man in The Suicide Squad.
No, like, who was he in the show?
Dr. Kirtle Jr.
Okay, thank you. You gotta tell me this. I don't know half of these people's names at this point.
Dr. Kirtle Sr., by the way, Mackenzie Gray, was nominated for 3 Leo Awards since leaving Riverdale.
Oh, dang.
Including 2 separate categories, movie and television movie, in 2020.
Wow.
He has won 3 Leo Awards across his career.
Okay, good job.
That's the awards for film and television in Vancouver.
Ah.
Yeah. There are so many things that film in British Columbia. There's a British Columbia specific Emmys, basically. They have Emmy style categories.
I mean, it's like the Jeff Awards.
Yeah,
we got the Jeff Awards. It's similar, except not for filming. It's for stage, but.
Zoe de Grand Maison, who played Evelyn Evernever, starred in last year's horror comedy western Oregon Trail.
Oh.
From the director of
Dysentery,
Reno 911, and a lot of work by that troupe of comedians.
Okay.
Sean Deppner, who played Brett Weston Wallace, was in 2 episodes of Fargo Season 5. We've seen him and did not recognize him.
Who did he play?
He played the wife beater that John Hamm gives a lesson to. The lesson first being how to properly beat your wife so he doesn't have to give you the second lesson, which is killing him.
Oh.
Yes.
Man, we totally did not recognize
him.
No.
Meanwhile, Nicholas Barash, who played Julian Blossom in the farewell season of Riverdale, was nominated for the Drama Desk Outer Circle and Lucille Lortel Award for Best Actor in an Off-Broadway musical for The Butcher Boy.
Oh.
That ran summer of 2022, so not really a where are they now, but I just want to talk about it and give him some credit.
Yeah. Yes. Did he get a talk in that one?
Julian Blossom.
Oh, wrong one. Never mind.
Yeah, the one we saw in the Hades Town tour.
Never mind. Get confused. Yeah, I saw him.
I think that Carl Walcott, Clay Walker, moved to Quebec.
Oh.
Because he has a lot of recent titles, and most of them have French names.
Oh, probably.
But yeah. His character name is like English, like, you know, Steven or, you know, Eric or whatever.
Yeah, probably. Probably moved to Quebec.
That's also true of a lot of things he did before Riverdale is French titled things that I'm guessing are from Quebec.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
You know what else sounds kind of French? Sarah Desjardins. She played Donna.
Oh.
If you'll recall, Donna from Stonewall Prep, who got away with almost killing Jughead.
Yeah.
She went on to be a major character in Yellow Jackets.
Oh.
And is in at least one episode of the upcoming not spinoff of Doom Patrol, Dead Boy Detectives.
Oh.
You know who's directing the pilot of Dead Boy Detectives?
No, I don't.
The guy that directed the first episode of Riverdale. Yeah.
Colton Woods. Gonna say it now.
If a show called Dead Boy Detectives doesn't find at least one Colton Woods, what are
right?
we doing?
Right?
Asha Ashanti Bromfeld, who played Melody of the Pussycats, was in most of Netflix's Lock and Key adaptation and published her second novel last year.
Yes, I looked up that novel. It kind of looks like smut.
It's got a pretty horny cover.
Yeah.
One of the top tags is romance. I don't know how explicit. I don't know if I... But there is a romance.
It's the type of cover on TikTok they'd be talking about all the sexy times.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Finishing up. Going far, far down the list to Chris Mason, who played Veronica's dead husband, Chad.
Oh.
Dead because Veronica made him that way. He's set to play Kieran Atreides in Dune Prophecy, a prequel series for Max set 10,000 years before the reign of Paul Muad'Dib.
Oh my god. Dang.
That is where they are now, or will be soon.
Jeez.
This is why we couldn't do it this week.
I'm going to be honest. Some of these people are not who I expected to be up, and there are others I thought you would put up.
Like who?
Like, I didn't think we'd get Chad, because you hate Chad. But with a fact like that, I guess you gotta include it.
I gotta include it.
I thought I'd get Chad Michael Murray. I thought I'd get some Joaquin.
Where are they now? C2E2 2024.
Yeah!
We are definitely jumping in that line and asking him, where did the rocket ship go?
Where?
Did Alice kill you before you launched, or did you launch? And if so, to where?
Where is the rocket ship? I need to know. Also, great abs. But where's the rocket ship? I didn't get to ask Carl Urban what's on the other side of the wall, so now I need to ask you, where'd the rocket ship go? Are you dead or are you not?
Where is Shannon Purser, who played Ethel? Well, she's the only member of the cast still on Twitter. That's where she is. She's the last one.
Yeah.
Yes. Some of them still log in like once a month to like post an article or something.
That's it. Yeah. I still follow a bunch of them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, now it is time. Mm-hmm. To say farewell to all of our segments.
Okay.
I'm going to start with one that even I had forgotten we ever did.
Okay.
Darlin, what was your favorite pop culture reference?
Oh, fuck.
And since it is the finale, I'd say in all of Riverdale.
I'm really bad at remembering things. Know this. Fuck. Is there one that you think is my favorite?
No.
Oh. What's your favorite?
The one that bubbles up for me is just using the death of James Dean to immediately plant a setting down to the day.
Yeah.
It's so immediate and puts you not only into just the era, but the feeling. Like you're not in the 50s. You're in a very specific grief that Betty is having right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my answer.
Okay. I would like a fun one, but I don't know. I feel like I need a list of like what pop culture references were there.
Oh God, that would be the longest list ever written.
Someone probably put it together on the internet.
This is your favorite.
Is FP? Oh yes. Okay. Yes, we found it. So my favorite is FP's. Jail number being 24601.
Of course.
Yes, that's it. That is so it. The end.
Good night and thank you. Amen. But yeah, we got a lot of segments. Do you want to do them in sort of chronological order?
Oh.
Darling, okay. What are the teens on Instagram up to?
Not a lot.
You found some teens. Were they on Instagram or did you go to TikTok where the teens have migrated?
I found one thing on Instagram.
Okay.
That I actually just found it like earlier today.
Oh.
And it was a post that was not actually from Instagram. It's totally like a screenshot from like a forum somewhere.
It looks like a Tumblr to me.
Probably Tumblr. But it's great because it's someone's commentary on Nana Rose.
Yes.
And they said, I love Nana Rose. She's so horrible. And every time something awful is discovered in Riverdale, she's like, oh, yeah, I knew about that. You just never asked.
This is a thing we've literally said.
We've said
this. Is a thing we've said.
I'm glad others agree. I also found someone on Instagram that is a Riverdale collector.
Oh, fantastic.
And their entire account is stuff from the show.
That's great.
So they got like Jughead's like corduroy jacket.
Yeah, when he was a teacher from Teacher Time.
They got the Heather's Playbill.
Oh, that's good. The Farm
the
Presents.
The Farm Presents. Yes. Like, what is this? Congratulations to the cast and crew.
It's time for big fun.
Building our community one hand at a time. Sponsoring local cultural
one hand,
events.
One liver, one kidney.
Have a great run. Join the farm.
Was there even a shot of these open? Did they have to do all this? This is fantastic.
I do not know, but it's
this is
amazing.
Great. I love it.
So then we got other clothing items. We got a season 7 film club poster that's just like literally
just
in the background.
Set dressing, yeah.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Some graduation robes.
Oh, that's the best episode they ever made.
It was Archie's graduation robes specifically.
A lot of season 5 costumes.
I mean, that makes sense. It's like the easiest ones to get. My God, I need that backpack. It's a backpack that's just a whole lot of season 1 Jughead and Archie's faces.
But
great.
This just reminds me that this show is now history. This is a collectible. Like we're doing the retrospective now. We're doing sort of the same work as this person, but from a different angle. From, you know, they're taking the physical artifact angle clearly,
yeah.
And that's wonderful.
Well, and what's fun here is like it seems that they, since they have a lot of clothing items, when they have gone to like some of the cons, they take the items for when they're meeting the
right.
cast members,
yeah,
and being
obviously.
Like, hey, this was yours, like, and there's some really fun pictures. Just want to see if there's any.
Oh, Babylonium stuff.
Got Babylonian playing card,
Le
mat
Bonui
sticks,
stuff.
Got coasters. We got a pop tape menu.
Oh, this is the throwback menu that went in the time capsule.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And then got used when they actually went back in time.
Yeah. We got Jughead's Madhouse.
When he finally got to introduce Sabrina.
By Jughead Jugular Jones.
It's cool that they've got something from the finale specifically.
They are also a collector of other Archie memorabilia.
Oh, yeah. I do love the cells from the Filmation show. So, I don't love the Filmation show, but I'd love to have some cells from it.
Yeah.
I would really like to get into cell collecting from stuff, you know?
I think cell collecting would be kind of cool.
get you some like
especially
90s DuckTales
like,
stuff.
Found, I don't know, like a cool like light box type thing to set it up in.
I would love to get something from After War Gundam X.
Yeah.
Or Turn A, but those have got to be expensive because people actually like that show.
Yeah, so those are my Instagram finds. I did find, so TikTok's kind of weird because the majority of it is like people just making compilation videos of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a lot of what's on Instagram now too. But I did find a clip someone posted, and it was from an interview that was probably on, you know, it's on YouTube, from a press circuit that Cole Sprouse was on. But it was him telling a story about the final season of Riverdale, actually.
Yeah.
And it was when they were filming the scene where he has to bust down the door into Brad Rayberry's place.
Yes.
So apparently they only had 3 door frames. So they're like, you get 3 tries. We have 3 door frames. That's it. And so the first time he did it, it busted through. And apparently there was like a huge cloud of dust. The shot was unusable. Like, couldn't do it. So he did
it. Clean your shit. God.
He did it the second time. And I think he said the like frame fell over.
Oh, yeah. Don't want that.
And then the third time he busted through, you know, fell forward, then like went back against the door. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's the shot. And then he looked down and he realized he split his pants open while doing it. And his entire like crotch was hanging out.
So What did we get in the episode?
I think
then?
They ended up using that shot. It's just they, luckily his junk wasn't in it.
Lucky for him, I guess.
But his pants, yeah, completely ripped open. So that was the story I found. And that's what's going on social media.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you very much. Another one of our oldest segments, even older than that. Is there anyone we haven't done panel to screen for? Did we do... I think we even did Smithers, right?
Oh, yeah. We did so many panels to screen. I mean, like, the only people we haven't done it for is people who were introduced, like, late.
I think we even...
Because we stopped doing...
We even did, like, a informal one for Clay, I think. We certainly talked about Clay.
Yeah.
As Kevin's physical therapist turned husband in the Life with Archie series. Pass.
Yeah, we can pass on that one. It's okay. It's fine.
Another segment we did quite a while ago was randomly choosing a classic Archie comic.
Yeah.
In fact, I eeny, meeny, mighty mowed my way through our large, large shelf full of digest to pull out Archie Pals and Gals Double Digest number 22.
Oh, this is an old... I mean, this only cost like $2.75, so this was a while ago.
This still has the comics code stamp in the corner. This is a while ago.
Let me see if it has a date. A date in here. Archie's Pals and Gals, 1996. Yeah. We got some Captain Crunch advertisement.
Why don't you rifle through and I'll tell you to stop and we are going to read that randomly chosen story.
Okay.
And then come up with how to adapt it into a Riverdale plot.
Okay.
So go ahead and rifle. Stop.
Okay, we gotta get to the start of this one. Sorry. Okay, so we have read Archie and the Gang in Inside Reggie.
And this is sort of a day in the life of Reggie Mantle speaking directly to the reader, breaking the fourth wall, and giving his perspective on his life.
Yes, and why he is the way he is and what he does. I know how I would Riverdale-ify this.
Go right ahead, please.
Okay, in the first panel, there is Reggie, and then there is Angel Reggie and Devil Reggie on his dresser.
They're too big to fit on his shoulders. They are hanging out on the furniture.
Here's what's going to happen. Reggie gets fucking possessed.
It's sounding a little more River Vale, but I'll allow it.
You didn't specify what season. But that's it. Reggie gets possessed by a demon Okay? Uh-huh. And it's a battle inside, though, of, like, good Reggie trying to fight the demon, but they gotta, like, call in Sabrina to come an exorcism. They have to also, so in this, he tries to go hit on Midge, and then, like, Moose goes to kill him.
Yes, that's the ending.
I would do it with him as his possessed self, kidnaps Midge.
Clearly.
To, like, eat her.
Obviously.
She's
just a tasty little snack.
People rush in to save her, and then also, like, exorcism time. Banishment of the demon.
Now, like we've found with so many of these, they already did adapt this.
Yes.
This is just Reggie's internal subplot during the episode where he's riding around with Hiram and learning about his backstory as a young man.
Yeah.
Watching his father get gunned down in the Pops parking lot.
Yes.
They already did this one. They've done so many.
But he hasn't been possessed.
Yeah, yeah. I would follow the slice of life thing. It would turn out more like the Return of the Pussycats episode from season 6.
Mm.
Except it would be about Reggie waking up and seeing things from his perspective. We get a little Rashomon with it. Everyone would act a little off. And in the end, it's revealed that it's because Reggie has been our hidden narrator all along.
Oh.
Mm-hmm,
oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And maybe it does end with one of his scams going wrong. After Reggie is revealed as the narrator of this tale, he's about to, like, seize the spoils of this scam, and whoever he's working against does, just bash down the door, much like Moose rushing him on that park bench.
Yeah.
Before he can place a chaste smooch upon Midge.
I like mine better.
Of course you do. It has demonic possession. Yes, who doesn't? Everyone likes yours better.
Obviously.
I just had to provide the minority report. So, darling, we have another segment.
Yeah.
I think your favorite segment in the history of the show.
Though we only did it once.
Well, where else was there to go from there?
I mean, yeah, it was.
We are speaking of when we read chapter by chapter the saga, the absolute masterpiece, All the Snakes of the Forest.
Yes.
Of course, yes. We concluded All the Snakes of the Forest. But.
But I went looking. Because I was like, man, I wonder what else our wonderful author of All the Snakes in the Forest has been up to.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did find out is they have orphaned many of their stories on AO3.
Oh, uh-huh.
There's only one Riverdale story actually associated with their account now. But they orphaned their other stories, so you can still find them if you search properly.
Okay.
And I did find one called Sugaring Season.
Okay.
Do you want the summary first?
Give me that summary, please.
So the summary is, if they're all heirs to the maple syrup fortune, then any one of their families could have killed Jason. Featuring 8 potential maple syrup heirs, 1 long-lost fortune, 1 magical carnival, 5,000 acres of haunted wood, and quite a few relationships that need working out.
Now, this author did predict how haunted the forest is.
Yes.
They did not predict it was a palladium-based haunting, but who could have?
Who could have? So I was kind of thinking we could do chapter 1.
Let's read chapter 1. Let's okay. Alternate. You do a while, and then I'll take a while, or I can start.
Okay, here we go. All things considered, the snakes in boxes part of her mother's explanation.
Excuse me?
The snakes in boxes part of her mother's explanation wasn't the wildest thing Veronica heard that night.
I need an explanation for her mother's explanation.
Wasn't there an episode where there were snakes in boxes?
What?
Wasn't that in the show? Hermione came home and there were, like, snakes in a box and it was, like, a sign.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Okay, so, all things considered, the snakes in boxes part of her mother's explanation wasn't the wildest thing Veronica heard that night. I'm sorry, Veronica said after a moment's pause. Maple syrup fortune? technically, her mother said, it's a maple sap fortune. Syrup is just like... Syrup is just one of the many products one can derive from the sap.
This is true. Do you want to tell the people what we did last weekend?
I dragged you on a 10-mile hike, and we stumbled across a maple sugar festival at a forest, like a nature center.
Mm-hmm.
And
we saw a demonstration of the evaporator.
Yes.
Turning the sap into syrup.
Yes, I got to get a little French toast stick to dip in some maple syrup.
We even saw some historical demonstrations making an evaporator out of a hollowed out log, which seems unwise.
Yes. We also saw some rescued animals, such as a hawk and a coyote.
A coyote they made stupid.
Some people in Tennessee were like, this is a dog. Let's raise this little puppy. And they were wrong. It was not a dog. It was a coyote.
It is a coyote that is incapable of living in the wild. So it just sort of looks at you.
Yeah. But that was surprising.
That's how much research we do for this show. We attend maple syrup festivals.
We were the only ones there without children.
We are drawn by fate to such events.
Yes. It called us. It called us in. Veronica felt like her mother should break into a smile here to show this was all a ridiculous joke. But Hermione's voice was as focused and as serious as it was, as if she was confessing sins to a priest. There's also maple candy, maple taffy, maple beer, of course, maple barbecue sauce. What? Veronica said. And I haven't even gotten to the maple soap, Hermione said. Maple soap is the single greatest innovation Riverdale has ever produced.
Probably true.
Veronica stared at her. Just behind her mother's head, Smithers dusted the mantle and nodded along with a smile on his face, like he had endless good things to say about the maple soap industry if only given the chance.
Also probably true.
So Daddy has an old family feud with Clifford Blossom and now plans to use the drive-in land to establish a new sap-producing plant, Hermione said. One that will drive Clifford out of business. Because Hermione said, we are the rightful heirs to the maple fortune, or we would have been if Townsend Blossom hadn't murdered your father's great-uncle Sullivan. What? With the help of old Zedekiah Cooper.
Good old Zedekiah Cooper?
What?
A murderer?
Not that I hold grudges, Hermione finished, but you see, this is all about the maple. Veronica texted Betty later that night. Turns out Cheryl's ancestor killed my ancestor? ? Betty texted back. I know. How did you know? Oh, wait. I just read that right. Your ancestor? I'll let you do the next section.
Okay. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, Kevin Keller tried to sneak out of his house to meet his new boyfriend and ran directly into his father.
Oh, hey,
Kevin said.
I thought I heard the sprinklers running, so I came out to investigate because we wouldn't want the grass to be too healthy.
He trailed off. It occurred to him that unlike Cheryl Blossom or Veronica Lodge, he was spectacularly bad at carrying off dramatic scenes. It had to be because he didn't have the kind of parents who forced you to generate those scenes. He just had good parents, or parent, just the one, who happened to be the sheriff and who did things like patrol drive-ins in his cop car if he knew Kevin wanted to watch a movie. Kev, you need to stay indoors at night, his father said. No coming out onto the lawn.
No coming out onto the lawn,
Kevin said.
The lawn is part of our property. It's within the boundaries of Kellertown, Dad.
There's a killer in this town, and that's bigger than us, said Sheriff Keller. This thing is big, Kevin. Big.
Right, because they destroyed your murder board, Kevin said,
placing us squarely in season one. Sheriff Keller grasped him by the forearm and drew him inside, then locked the door, then locked the windows, then drew the curtains closed, then lifted one curtain to glance warily down the street, then pulled it down again.
Okay, Kevin said. I keep the real stuff off the board and I'm glad I did,
Sheriff Keller said. The Blossoms as good as admitted it to me earlier. This has to do with the fortune.
Someone wants their spooky, fabulous house? Kevin tried. House? Sheriff Keller said, looking thrown off. God no, Kev. Think of the landscaping costs on that place. It's got its own graveyard. No, someone wants the Maple fortune. Oh, right. Maple was a Riverdale thing. The one you always said great-great-grandpa Duncan should have inherited? Kevin said now. Sheriff Keller looked briefly, uncharacteristically enraged. And he would have inherited it too, he said, if Ezekiel Blossom and Clancy Cooper and Redmond Lodge hadn't murdered him for it.
At around the same time at Riverdale High, the Pussycats convened for a jam session. Val was late. She had been invited to the memorial. The other two hadn't been. Not that Josie would have gone if she had been invited. Since Josie thought Penelope Blossom and her husband should be kept on leashes at all times.
Unlike cats, that's the opposite.
Still, it was unusual for that the Blossoms had invited Valerie Brown and not Josie McCoy. Josie's mother was the mayor, and Josie had been friends with both twins. Val's parents owned a laundromat, and Val had made out with Jason in a supply closet once. I can't believe you went, Josie said when Val finally arrived. But since it was Jason's memorial, I'll excuse the lateness. Don't do it again, though. You had, like, no reason to be late last night. Val did have a reason. A broad-shouldered, athletic, red-haired reason. But this wouldn't have been an acceptable reason for Josie, so now she just shrugged. Why were you invited anyway? Mel said.
I promise, I hereby vow, to attend the funerals of every person I ever make out in a supply closet with.
Yeah.
I think Val's in the right.
So, me.
I'm on Val's side. Yes, I will go to your memorial service.
We have not made out in the supply closet.
Okay, well, maybe I might be busy that day.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. Obviously, the Blossoms invited anybody who they think might have killed Jason, Josie said now, because she'd been Cheryl's only real friend since the first grade, and so she kind of knew how the Blossoms worked. Yeah, but Val, Mel said. Josie had to concede that this was bizarre. Val's only crime was having great hair, but sharing its particular secret with no one. It's the Maple fortune, probably, Val said herself, without explanation. Josie was so single-minded about practice that she refused to indulge her curiosity right away, because they had music to work on. But when practice was over and the girls were getting ready to go home, she decided to ask, Maple fortune? What? Val said. You said the Blossoms invited you because of their maple fortune. No, Val said, shaking her head. I meant the Blossoms suspect me because of the maple fortune, and it isn't theirs. At the other Pussycat's befuddled glances, she sighed. The Browns are the rightful heirs to the maple fortune, and we would be, but the Blossoms and the Coopers and the Lodges and the Kellers wanted it, so they pushed my great-great-great-aunt Carrie Ann out a window.
Reggie Mantle had been invited to the memorial, but hadn't gone. First of all, he'd already had a memorial for Jason, with Moose and the others. Second of all, he'd suspected he was going to lose the captaincy to Archie Andrews, and that was depressing enough without adding to it by thinking about his previous sort of but friend mostly rival. Third of all, Reggie actually cared about football. So rather than waste his time doing non-football things, he spent the week working out in his home gym and then going to bed at a reasonable hour. Thank God you didn't go, said his brother Oliver, who was holding Reggie's punching bag. Dude, a bulldog says goodbye to his friends in his own way. Dude, Oliver said. Don't blame me. I know you know about the fortune. What? Ours? Reggie said, not letting up on the punching bag. Not ours, Oliver said, sounding very dismissive of the sizable hair gel company inheritance that had netted the Mantles their house, an apartment in Rotterdam, and a beach on Anna Maria Island, and somehow their own coat of arms. Okay, so... So, what fortune? Reggie said, only half paying attention. Pop-Pop's family maple fortune, dumbass! What's the matter, darling?
Pop-Pop's whole family was from Indonesia? Reggie said, still punching. How did they have a maple fortune? They came here in the 1700s, Oliver said. From Indonesia? They had to go back, Oliver said. Because when they got here, the Blossoms and Coopers and Lodges and Gellers and Browns burned down their house to get the maple money.
So my turn.
Yes.
Okay. Fred Andrews never suspected that he'd only been invited to the memorial because of the maple thing. Neither did Archie.
Neither did anyone.
Neither of them was the kind of person to assume they might be suspects in a murder case connected to a stolen maple fortune.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't discuss anything like that. Instead, Archie reeled out, slowly, his current source of inner conflict. The what he felt was inherent tension between music and football. And carefully didn't mention last week's conflict, his relationship with his music teacher. What if I want to give my heart to more than one thing, he asked Fred. In a perfect world and stuff. Arch, Fred said, you have a big heart, son. Maybe too big. And I'd love to be the one to guide that heart, but I can't be. You've got to choose your own path. I thought so, Archie said glumly. It was good of you to give Jason's jersey to Penelope Blossom, Fred told him, hoping to make him smile. Yeah, Archie said. She lost her kid. What was I supposed to do, act like a jerk? I should hope not, Fred said. We've had enough jerks in this town to last a lifetime. Enough in this family, too. We've got to put some good into the world, son. Right, Archie said, grinning now. Wouldn't want to be like great-great-great-great-great-grandpa Aaron. Half the town ganged up on him. He was so mean. Well, yes and no, Fred said. It was a different time, son, really. They killed him to get his maple fortune. But his being mean didn't help.
So, naturally, shortly after Jughead pinned the Coopers up on the murder board, Veronica appeared and they had to add the Lodge family. Then Kevin showed up and added the Kellers. Then Val wandered in, sighing, asked Betty not to lead her brother on, and tacked on the Browns. Reggie was a surprise. He strode in, nearly bowled Jughead over, and said, Heard you had a murder board, Beetlejuice. Trying to deflect attention away from yourself? You're the obvious suspects. He added not just his father and brother, but also six or seven cousins, then lounged around looking pleased at himself, even though everyone wanted him to leave. The problem was, he demonstrated an uncanny knack for knowing exactly which back issues of the Blue and Gold would have information on the town's maple history. He declared it was his mantle maple sense. Don't take your talent so seriously, Jughead told him. No one else does. By the time Archie showed up, Veronica had broken up two fights, Val had retreated to a corner to ignore everyone from under cover of her headphones, Kevin and Jughead were possibly making plans in another corner to dispose of Reggie by any means necessary, and Betty was adding the final maple-related family to the murder board. The Andrews family, Archie said, sounding blank. Archie, Betty said, whirling around in surprise. Why are we up there? Archie said. Because, Archie, said Cheryl, appearing very dramatically behind him, all the town's first families are after my family's maple syrup fortune.
And that's chapter one.
That's chapter one. I feel like this author continues to absolutely have this show's number.
Yeah.
But I also get the sense it was written too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the show was not bringing the raw material to make a masterpiece like All the Snakes in the Forest yet.
Not quite. This was February 2017.
Yeah, this is early days. I feel like this was written the day after the Memorial Service episode aired.
Maybe. Let me look up when All the Snakes in the Forest came out specifically, like how that timeline was different.
Wait, you said February 17?
Mm-hmm.
That is the day after chapter 4 aired. That's the action.
All the Snakes in the Forest came April 2017. We are almost there to the anniversary. It was April 4th.
Oh, wow.
This when it premiered, or the story first got posted, and it was completed on April 5th. This is almost the anniversary. So I do look forward to reading the rest of Sugaring Season, however, because I don't know where it goes. I have not read all 9 chapters.
In fact, this came out 6 days before the Memorial episode aired. All the stuff in that story, in that chapter about the Memorial, must be taken from the Next Time On trailer.
Oh my goodness! Good job!
It actually went up the day after the episode where someone destroys Sheriff Keller's murder board.
Oh!
And they shut down the drive-in.
See, fan fiction writers, they crazy. They only get an idea and they whip it out so fast.
Yes, yes.
It is. That is a turnaround. And if this person ever, like, does find this, like, we do mean this with, like...
No, this is done with love and care.
Love and care. Like, we appreciate the work you've done.
So many of the bizarrities of Riverdale that get, like, underlined or tweaked in that chapter are things we talked about in our first season.
Yeah,
like, we are definitely of a kind on a wavelength with this author, which is why we love these stories so much.
Well, and it captures, like, I just think about, like, Archie in that. Like, yes. Oh my god, it captures football and music. Like, I don't know.
You can't possibly do both. It's a law of physics somehow.
He's so torn. His life's so hard. And I love it.
But that's not the only thing we've ever read for this program. There was a long time where every episode, or at least every once in a while, I would catch listeners up on a recent publication from Archie Comics.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
And
that's
talk
right.
about how it has received influence from the program Riverdale. And so, I took a look at Big Ethel Energy. This is published online on Webtoon. Written by Carol Brown Ahmed with an art team of Siobhan Keenan, Maria Lee, and Kathy Lay. The concept of Big Ethel Energy is that it follows Ethel Muggs about 7 years after graduation. She's drawn back to the sleepy town of Riverdale, where she has very, very few fond memories from her New York City magazine job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. I just found it very dull. It's definitely pitched to young women anxious about their place in the world.
Oh,
okay. I'm none of those things. It does not land for me at all.
Yeah.
But it does have a lot of influence from Riverdale. It premiered fall 2021. It is currently ongoing. They did a full, like, first book, took a hiatus, and are now 50-some chapters into book 2.
Oh, wow.
Publishing weekly on Wednesdays. You can catch up. So there is some very, like, clear aesthetic influence from Riverdale. Like, the sign at Pop's Chocolate Shop is the Riverdale design.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl is dating a lady. They made Jughead super hot for some reason.
Oh.
And also, because it debuted in fall 2021... Ethel moves in with Betty Cooper in this comic before that happens on Riverdale, huh?
Nice.
Ah, think about that. Think about that.
I gotta go look up Hot Jughead. I'm very intrigued.
Look up Big Ethel Energy, Chapter 3, I think. So yeah, I read the first 5 weekly chapters, so like a month worth, right? And nothing really happened.
No.
There are some good funny faces in lieu of jokes. Nothing really good or bad happens to Ethel. She's just caught in a constant sense of anxiety between, like, mild and major.
Oh, dang!
Ah, we found Hot Jughead. Is this chapter... this is chapter 4, excuse me.
Dang!
This Jughead...
he's ripped. He got tattoos.
Was an app developer who sold his app for a fortune and now makes a living day to day filming like cooking videos for YouTube.
That's kind of great. Kind of love that.
Yeah, everyone has cool young people jobs.
It's a good looking Jughead. I mean, whoa! Whoa.
Right? He's downright Byronic.
Jeez!
Also, go back to Hot Jughead. Go the big introduction panel.
Yeah.
Look at that table. Like, not everything is done up to the level of Hot Jughead.
No, that table is, like, done with her eyes closed. But Hot Jughead!
Like, the priorities are clear, right?
Yes, yes. Tables, we don't care about the tables.
So, yeah, I read those first five chapters to get, like, the introductory stretch of her coming back and being reintroduced to these people and keeps flashing back to that time she thought she was going on a Jughead.
She thought she was going on a Jughead.
She thought she was going on a date with Jughead, but what was actually happening is Jughead and Archie and Veronica were all just getting her employee free passes to a movie and not going with her.
Oh.
Devastating memory.
Aww.
That she's carried with her for 10 years, including 7 years after graduation. So I skipped to the most recent chapter, where Ethel gets a big job offer back in the city and doesn't know how to tell her boyfriend, Moose. And she gets comforted by her BFFs, Betty and Veronica, over this.
Mm.
That's what it's like. It just seems...
Yeah, it doesn't sound very interesting.
Kind of inert to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Hot Jughead.
If you're looking for...
Hot Jughead.
If you're looking for a book to spend time with people who have what 13-year-olds imagine 27-year-old problems are...
Yeah.
It's the webtoon for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
I would not recommend Big Ethel Energy for pretty much anyone else.
Thank you for taking one for the crowd. Is that all of our segments? Did we do them all?
Do you want to do maybe our most famous segment? What are your predictions?
What are my predictions?
What are your predictions for how Riverdale will be remembered? For how it will survive or not survive in culture?
It's less a prediction, but more a hope.
Okay, give me your hope.
My hope is... that in, like, 7 years,
mm-hmm.
people will suddenly, like, the kids will stumble across it.
Right.
And they'll be like, oh my god, what is this? This is amazing.
Uh-huh.
Look, like, at this.
Like, the kids of today are watching The Office and Friends and, like...
Gilmore Girls for the billionth time.
Yes.
Yes.
The 22-episode rhythm...
Yeah.
The children yearn for it.
Yeah, and those things that you, like, put on as comfort shows. I know you don't, but, like, every other person in the world has comfort shows that they put on and they rewatch again and again.
Right.
He's very strange. He doesn't, like, rewatch stuff. I don't understand.
There's so much stuff I haven't seen yet.
I know!
There's too much new stuff to rewatch stuff.
Comfort. Comfort. I'm overwhelmed by the world. Let's watch a show I already know what happens. I can handle it. Okay, like, I have to be in the right mood for new stuff. But I my hope is that there will be a group of the youth, of the people who, like, rediscover it, and mm-hmm. it becomes, like, a cult classic.
Right, right. I think that would take time. That would take people discovering it and not growing up alongside it.
Yes.
Because it is an interesting case of that style, that format, but with... feet firmly planted in the parallel world that is very not that.
Yeah.
Like, it tries very hard, especially in the first few years, to look so different, to look so expensive.
Yeah.
And fit in with streaming. Riverdale is a success because of streaming. Just looking at the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Season one premiered to 2.4 million viewers. Finale of 1.5 million viewers. Respectable numbers. Then the show went on Netflix.
Yeah.
And when it came back on air, we're more than doubling that. Season two premieres with 3.75 million viewers.
Oh, big difference.
Right, right. Being produced for broadcast and streaming, both, like, in its content, in its aesthetics, it's going to be interesting to see if it does get rediscovered by the next generation of youths.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think that Riverdale is remembered as an incubator for talent, right? I would love to follow some of the people in the writer's room as they go on to more personal projects, they've tried every tone. So seeing them do something with maybe a little more consistency, something that is going for more mainstream goals, and seeing how they excel at them. And of course, obviously, the actors. Charles Melton, the first huge success story post-Riverdale.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal.
Yes, like... yes. Lily Reinhart's got it in her if she is... If she gets a little luck, if she gets the right job, and if she's willing to do the thing. She's very vocal as a person about her priorities and how they don't always line up with what you need to do to play the Hollywood game.
Yeah.
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 But she's got the talent and a half. That's undeniable.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, and just going back to like the, I hope it gets rediscovered. I think about like some friends of ours that have a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he likes Archie comics.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't know Riverdale. He's too young for Riverdale. So there is, you know, that next generation that's reading the comics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in 7 years, you know, 6 years, they'll be in college type thing. And like, what do you do in college? You watch stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's when discover shows, when you're like in your dorm. And so it'll be interesting to see.
I would really appreciate if this is going to sound like I'm just saying, man, I wish more people agreed with me. But what let me say it a little more elegantly I would like in the future people to take this show as it stands and not as people want it to be. Not try to put it in a box that you made up. The box.
Yeah.
You shaped the box, you put a label on it, and you try to put something in it, and you're upset that it didn't fit. Whose fault is that? You know?
I would very much, when I say, like, when we tell people, like, we watch Riverdale and we made the show, for them to take it, seriously, in the sense of, like, no, don't think that I watch it just to hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I legit enjoy it. Do I think they do really dumb stuff sometimes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do I think they do some really great stuff? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do I think there's just silly shit in the middle? Yes. But this show was not created to hate on it.
Right.
It was to go along the crazy ride. And I think, like, it gets kind of annoying. People are like, oh, you do that, like, to make fun of it, right? That's the only reason. Like, no.
We have spent 7 years very clearly pointing out when the show does something ridiculous and it's wonderful, and when they do something ridiculous and it's an impairment to the show.
Yes.
Like, when something is done with or without intention, with or without consideration. Like, there are lots of things going on, and this scoffing, I guess.
Yeah.
This, just like, come on, man.
Like, it's less than.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been fun. I'm very glad that we did this. I'm very glad that we, 7.5 years ago, when they had a trailer out, and I was like, oh my god, we have to at least watch the first episode. Like, I need to know.
And what a hell of a first episode.
I mean, that was pretty, like, how long were we doing History Honeys before then? Not like... super long, right? What, like a year, two, maybe a year?
That's one thing I didn't look up when I was setting
Well, and I asked this like I was not involved in podcasting very long.
We had been doing History Honeys for 7 months or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's very early on for me in this world. It was a bit of a jump. I was like, okay, we're going to do another one. We're going to do this thing. I'm very glad we did.
Yeah.
I'm very glad. It's been a great time. I've enjoyed my time with you.
I've enjoyed my time with you, too.
We have enjoyed not only, I think, the time together, but the time with the people who are listening. You know, we're closing a chapter on this part. And it's been a wild ride.
Yes.
We've been enjoyed it with others and, you know, meeting people at like C2E2, for example, and stuff that watched it and just thinking about what's come from it, like going there and we both dressed up as Jughead and we were handing out freaking fizzle rocks to people.
That was great.
Feeling sentimental.
No, I'm always going to look back at the Sex Archie era of my life.
Right?
At the, you know, the 20% of my life I've spent making Sex Archie as a good stretch.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Even the times when I was so serious about watching on broadcast, staying up late to have it posted that same night.
We grew a little.
Getting into bed at 2 a.m. just because I thought it was important that people, like, have it as soon as possible to be in the mix, in the conversation, maybe setting the conversation, maybe eventually finding our way into Riverdale fandom proper, which never, ever happened.
Because people were dumb.
Like, I guess it might go back to what I was saying earlier. There is a mismatch between how we see the show and how even its fans see the show.
Yeah.
It got so frustrating to me for a while that anytime, like, I would see a post from the creators or from the show account online, every comment was just about who's smooching who and who doesn't get enough time with other characters. And, like, they're fighting bears out here, man. Like, there's other shit to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to all be talking about, like, which camera techniques were lifted from which guy in the 70s. I get it. That can be an outlier, but there's more than ship shit.
Is there?
I guess not. I guess not, because of how many people I saw after the finale be like, oh, they all got together as a quad? I should probably just watch the finale. Even people who are completely divested or only watched the first, like, couple years.
Yeah.
I guess it's just all ship shit, even if you think you're beyond that. But there's another segment that we have to respect.
Yeah.
It's time to talk about what's coming up next.
Yeah, yes, if you've made it this far.
Yes.
Well, I didn't remember what I was going to say, though, before. Okay, I finally remembered. I was going to talk about how we are ending this part of our life, which means when people ask me what podcasts I do and I'm in certain settings, such as work, I don't have to avoid talking about one of them. Yeah, that's what it was. That's what I was
going to say. That's nice. That's
There's
nice.
Like two people at work who know about Sex Archie.
They should listen.
I don't know if they have. But they're people who thought it was cool.
Good.
And then I was like, I trust you.
You picked good people.
But yeah, so what is next? What is next? So Sex Archie is over. We are done.
This is the last one, I promise.
This is the last one.
If we get an answer from Chad Michael Murray, we're not going to tell you, not on an episode.
You got to follow us on Twitter at sex_Archie.
Yeah, I guess.
We could just do one, like, 30-second episode that's like, this is what he said, and that's it.
No. You know what? If that happens, I'm just going to add it to this episode and re-upload it. If your iTunes refreshes, it's because we got an answer out of Chad Michael Murray.
I want a 30-second episode.
Okay.
So what is next is we are coming at you with not the return of history, honey. Sorry, it's not happening. We are coming at you with a new show.
A brand new show. About
a very old show.
About a 30-year-old show plus.
We are going to be soon launching Whiskers.
And launching is right because this is an acronym for We Share Knowledge Regarding Sequest. That is right, Sequest DSV, the 1993 program broadcast on the NBC television network.
My absolute favorite childhood show.
Created by Rockne S. O'Bannon for Amblin Television, with the scientific guidance of Bob Ballard, an absolute all-star lineup to make an okay show.
No, a great fucking show. I love it. Do not diminish it.
We're going to be talking about its creation, its historical context, the way the changes behind the scenes make huge, huge changes in the tone and content of the episodes, particularly between the seasons, because the first, second, and third seasons are all essentially different shows.
Yes, this is true. It's going to be great. I'm so excited.
We're going to talk about Roy Scheider.
All I've wanted in my whole life is to have people I can talk about Sequest with.
Star of Sorcerer, of all that jazz.
Jaws.
Something about a fish, I guess.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting.
I'm very excited. Mm-hmm, we hope you'll enjoy.
Anyhow, we're just trying to think of things to say, which means...
because we don't want to say goodbye.
Which means we probably should.
Yes.
So one last time, I'm going to ask you to, hey, tell a friend about the show. It's complete. We are closing the book. We are ending the show. I'd like to thank our composer of our new theme, which you heard in its entirety, the full song, just for old time's sake, as the start of this episode. That is, of course, the illustrious J.W. Friedman, the artist occasionally known as Satellite High.
You can also follow us on Twitter, which is at @sex_Archie. That's a great place to maybe find out if we talk to Chad Michael Murray. I don't know. And you can come back and listen to our next show.
I'm going to be sharing that everywhere. I'm going to be promoting it. I plan to put the first episode on this feed.
Oh.
Just so, like...
people can find us.
So, yeah.
So you know.
You'll get a sampler. It'll have a little bumper to tell you where to find that show's feed. But, like, yeah.
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 Of course, I also have to thank our visual artist, Callum, for making our channel art that you've seen on our socials and on the show, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And from us here at Sex Archie,
our story is about a town, a small town, and the people who live in the town.
Yee-haw! Sugar. Aw, oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl. And you got me. Sugar. Aw, oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl, and you got me rocking you.
Break it down with me.
When I kiss you, girl, never knew how sweet a kiss could be. Then you lay your ever-loving stuff on me.
Break it down for me, fella.
I'm gonna make your life so sweet. Rocking, moving, shaking that stuff. I'm gonna rock your world complete. Rocking, moving, grooving, say what?
Pour a little sugar on it.
Ah.
Sugar.
Ah, oh, honey, honey.
You are my candy girl.
You got me rocking you. Break it down, won't you please?
Sugar.
Aw, oh, honey, honey.
You are my candy girl.
And you got me rocking you. Break it down, come on. And you got me. And you got me. And you got me.
Break it down, won't you please?
Oh, you were styling too, my man. Oh, did you see that move I busted? Oh, I was grooving. Was I grooving?